Hey, school is in session, or actually it's out in some places, but for today at Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 Podcast, this is episode 23 and school is in session. Today's guest is Gene Mixon, a kindergarten teacher from Pulaski County Elementary School in Hawkinsville, Georgia. I think that you're really going to enjoy this show. We talk about classroom management strategies as well as some excellent instructional techniques. Don't forget, it would be awesome if you left us a review or star rating in iTunes. That's how you get discovered in iTunes. Well, thanks for listening. Glad you joined us, and enjoy today's show.
Welcome to the Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 Podcast, bringing you ideas and resources for K-12 classrooms, schools, and school districts. Hosted by Steve Mileto. And now, here's Steve with this week's show.
Hey, this is Steve again with Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12, and today I'm with Mrs. Gene Mixon, a kindergarten teacher at Pulaski County Elementary School in Georgia. Say hi, Gene.
Hi.
Appreciate you joining us today, and by the way, before I forget, I visited Gene in her class, watched her teach, and took some notes, and so anytime I mention some kids' names, those names have been changed, okay? Those are not their real names. So anybody listening out there trying to figure out, I don't think she teaches a kid named that. Ha ha! I chose the right fake name to use. So anyway, let's go ahead and start first with you telling us a little bit about who you are and your background.
Okay. Of course, I'm from Hawkinsville, Georgia, and I teach here at Pulaski County Elementary School, and I have taught 32 years in kindergarten. I've never been promoted, so that's sort of a funny thing. But of course, kindergarten has changed a lot over the years. It's not the same as it was, say, 15 years ago,
right,
which has been interesting. It's been a challenge, but I have thoroughly enjoyed all these years, all 32 years.
Congratulations on the 32 years. That's awesome.
Thank you.
Well, I had the pleasure of watching you work with a class recently, and one of the first aspects of your teaching that is so noticeable is that you have routines and practices in place. Kids know what these are and are quick to transition when you need them to. And so before we get into instructional practices, I want to talk a little bit about these classroom routines that you have that work with classroom management.
I guess working with any students, to me, that is just, the most important, and that's what we work with at the beginning of the school year, so they'll know what to expect. Of course, little children, they want things to be consistent, and they do better. They know what's going to happen, what's going to take place. They like having a schedule, and so we work real hard with that at the beginning of the year, setting up classroom procedures, knowing how to move, the transitions, from whole group to small groups. And of course, we work a lot in what we call reading workstations and math tables, which is sort of like math centers, to keep it from being so chaotic. they have to know, what's expected and, what space they're supposed to be in for these different aspects of the day.
How do you introduce them to that? How do you, how do you start when you start the school year?
Well, we practice, especially with our, movement from workstations to whole group. We have to practice. We just, on my lesson plans at the beginning of the year, I have, practiced, moving to the stations. So they'll learn where those different parts of the room are. So they'll know, what I'm talking about if I say, you go to the writing station. Those first 2 weeks are so important in kindergarten. We're doing some review anyway,
right,
of things that hopefully they've already learned and already know. And so it's just, we spend more time with learning those procedures.
Spending time practicing and going through those routines, it pays off because here we are, we're recording this and we're real close to the end of your school year. And they have no problem moving, going here, going there, knowing what to do.
Right.
And you can tell that
That's
that practice
right.
pays off. You have this really cool rug or blanket that's on the floor that has squares that are just the size of a child when he or she sits. Tell me about how you use this and how it helps you with your class instruction.
it's essential for our day. Of course, I have seen rugs, and I've used different rugs in my classroom, you know, for whole group, you know, for our, I guess, a sharing time. And of course, I do our main instruction with them on the floor in a whole group. So I had seen in catalogs, of course, different rugs, and this one was just the perfect one as far as the size of the square, because they like to have their own little space,
right?
And they need their own little space to wiggle around, because they're not going to sit perfectly still. I mean, grown-ups don't sit perfectly still, but
that is a fact.
They need to have that little room for their knees, you know, to stretch their legs if they need to. And so I happened to see this rug. I think it was in a Lakeshore catalog. I purchased it myself with some extra money that I had, because I could see how it was going to be so helpful with control and with, you know, the procedures, you know, the transition time. And they had a place, you know, to be during whole group. When we are cleaning up from our small group activities or any activities that they're working with at their table, and if I say, okay, go to the rug, they know exactly where to go. I mean, they know their color of the square. And, of course, I use that also for, you know, the transition. I'll say all those sitting on a red square or a purple square, you know, so that keeps it, you know, from being a herd of children
right.
running back to the tables or running to a different point in the room.
That's nice, too. That gives an added level of helping to manage the movement and transition mm-hmm. in the class mm-hmm. with just the different colors. I like that. You know, it's funny because I was, thanks to my kids when they were very young wanting to play soccer, I ended up becoming a soccer coach and then ended up coaching all the way for a long time. And I learned some lessons, and it was funny. The person who trained me taught me how to use a blanket. He said, I'm going to, and it was funny, anytime I ran into another youth, he taught youth coaches across the state of Georgia, and you could always tell when you ran into somebody who he coached because on how to be a coach, because they used a blanket to start and stop practice, and during the game, this is where they were. And he mm-hmm. knew a lot about how kids need these routines and practices. Mm-hmm. And once you know it, it's funny because it worked great, just like mm-hmm. what you were saying. They'd come right to that blanket when I'm ready to start, when I'm ready to stop. During the game, they'd stay there, and next to me is another coach who his kids are running around, and he'd look over and go, how do you do that? It's the blanket, man.
That's right.
And well, practicing the routine.
That's right.
So that's awesome. Thank you for telling me about that. I've also got to say this. You talk with the children. You use their names when you're referring them instead of making general statements to everyone. For example, you said, and remember, I've changed these names. you said, Rita, do we need, and what does that mean, Fred? And what's so special about these vowels, Trent? Why? What does this help you with? And you use their names. So tell me about why it's important to use a child's name in the class.
In kindergarten, a kindergarten teacher is, you know, mother away from home.
Right.
So you have that, the first thing you want to do is to build that personal relationship with them. And of course, they want that. They need that. And so knowing their name, hearing their name, you know, is so special to them. And so that, you know, just comes natural to do that, because everybody likes to hear their name. I guess the most important part is that personal, like you care about them, you know who they are. But then another point is, it helps with their attention. It helps them to stay focused. It lets them know that you really want to know what they have learned or what they want to share, and what they're saying is important to me. Just the use of their name is for a personal aspect, but also is, you know, keeping their attention, staying focused, and being a part of the lesson too.
It's funny because I think sometimes adults forget how important it is for a child to hear you use their name. That first of all, that you know their name,
mm-hmm.
and they're not just, you know, hey, you, or, you know, you're making some general statement. Yes, I am talking to you, but I am using, you know, I'm not really using your name. You know, they need that. And I think there's some comfort in that, knowing that this grown-up knows who I am.
Right, exactly.
And you definitely use the names, and it's cool because you see the kids respond, and they're coming and going. And I think it also then, you know, like you said, it's it helps them know that you care about what they're doing and who they are.
Mm-hmm.
They are a person.
Mm-hmm.
When I visited you and the kids you were working with, changing beginning letters and creating new words. So let's talk about some instructional stuff now. You showed them examples on a board or a chart, and you had them practice by identifying new words created by changing the beginning letters, and you had them sound out the new words, and then you gave them a paper with stickies. Can you talk a little bit about this activity?
This was a phonics activity, using the sounds of the letters and showing, you know, of course, how to blend those sounds. But one of our activities that we practice with, with the blending, is changing like the beginning letter sound to make a new word, and seeing how important these sounds are, you know, and how they need to, you know, pay attention to where the sounds are, if they're at the beginning or at the end. And also to show them the importance of the vowels in the middle of the words. And of course, we talk about the vowels as being the glue that holds the word together, you know, holds the beginning letter and the ending letter. So that was part of the activity also. What I try to do with all of our activities, I just don't assume that they know, they understand what I want them to do to get the full effect of the activity and to learn from the activity. You know, I try to model for them, and I guess, you know, at the chart, you know, I do that to explain. Then they watch me, you know, move the letters and then, you know, blend the sounds. And then I have students, you know, to practice at the chart with me. And then when I'm finished the modeling and instructing and practicing, then they get to practice themselves. This particular activity, this lesson, I let them use a sheet that I had already put what we call the chunks, the word families, and then I put consonant letters on the sticky notes. I let them manipulate the letters, so they got to, every one of them in the group, in the class, got to move the letters, practice moving the letters themselves. And so I use that not only for them to have practice, but also as a type of formative assessment, so I could see, you know, who really was understanding about putting that beginning letter sound at the beginning and how it was changing the word. And of course, they loved doing this, and so they were shouting out the words, which, you know, they were fully engaged, which was exciting to me because they were excited about reading these words and how they could read a new word by just changing the beginning letter sound. But I could also see who might be having a little trouble with that and, you know, not as quick as, you know, to form the new words. So that let me know who I might need to work with more in our small group. But I really like for them to have a chance to manipulate the letters. You know, we use magnetic letters, but I want them to have something especially to take home with them so they can share with their parents and their parents can see what we worked with that day.
Right.
And so this particular activity with the paper and the sticky notes, you know, they got to take that home with them.
That was excellent. I got a little distracted for a second because we're sitting in a conference room at the school, and there's a class going down the hallway, and suddenly there's little faces appearing in the window looking in going, what's going on in there? So, the activity worked very well, and it was neat because you're right. And what I like is one of the things that you're talking about is that it gives you a chance using formative assessment techniques. It gives you a chance to notice those who get it quickly and those who may take a little longer, and then those who are struggling with it, who are not.
Right.
And I watched you as you went around, and you actually made some comments to a couple of them to see what was happening there. One of the things I want to talk about with this is what's very obvious about this activity is that it has a nice progression, which you just described, which you started, and I want to focus on that word that you use that word modeling. You're modeling it to them.
Mm-hmm.
And then it progressed to them doing eventually after you did you called on them, you got to see whether they were doing it or not. They got a chance to work with it on this piece of paper or actually with what you were doing. And then they actually had their individual. Can you talk about that progression, why it might be important to be able to go from modeling to them doing?
Well, I think I mentioned something I've learned over the years is you just don't assume that they know and that they understand what you want them to do. And this goes back to, you know, the directions, your procedures. You know, they've got to understand how to use the activity to be able to learn from it. To be able to practice the skill or the standard, you know, that you're working with. You know, sometimes it might seem a little mundane or here we go again. But, you know, showing them you know, what you want them to be able to do. The modeling part, I think, is so important in all areas, you know, math, reading, writing, and they're going to watch the teacher
yes.
do the activity. And, of course, then if you, you know, let them be a part of it, and then, of course, if they get, have their own manipulatives or whatever to actually show that they could do the same as the teacher, then have that sharing time, that conversation, you know, when they're calling out the words like this particular day and talking about the different words. You know, for me, you know, that's not chaos. That's, you know, showing how excited they are
right.
that they're able to do what their teacher was, you know, asking them to do, and they were understanding the skill.
It was also neat because it had that energy in there about they're like, check out these words. Uh-huh, we're making
right.
different words here. And,
exactly.
And it really permeated the room, which was exciting. And one of the things that you're keying in on is the idea that we need to model, and then we need to give them a chance to do it, to put their hands on and actually do what we're doing. And that is something that I think sometimes we forget, that it's important mm-hmm. to get them hands on and give them a chance, instead of just, like you were saying, just assuming that they can get it and moving forward. Because they can make the words in their voices doesn't mean that they necessarily know the patterns and what's happening.
Exactly.
You've kind of gotten into this, but I want to reiterate this just a little bit, which is one of the things you also did while you're doing this activity, when you're walking around, and you've addressed a little bit of this as you were talking about you're using it as formative assessment. You can tell whether they're getting it or not. Is you specifically went from child to child, and you asked them questions, and they had to answer you. And just talk a little bit about what you were doing by getting them to talk with you.
Well, I mean, that's just part of good teaching. You know, you want to be right there with them. You want to see what they can do. You want to, of course, say good job for those that, you know, are doing a good job with the, you know, making the new words, forming
right.
the words, reading the words, you know, actually reading the words, blending the sounds. And then if there's someone, you know, having a little difficulty, of course, you want to assist them and go over, you know, what you've just, you know, told the whole class. You want to go over it with them individually. You want to have that chance to do that. And of course, like I said, you make a note of who is struggling so you can work with them later in a small group to review that skill with them.
And I think that's important, what you were zeroing in on right there, which is you don't just go, oh, that was good to know. You actually come back to that because mm-hmm. you need to figure out how to get that child caught up. So you use that information then to try and figure out how to get them caught up where they need to be
right.
or understanding. You know, one of the other things that is very obvious that comes out of this just by listening to you talk is that you're there with the kids. You're not still
right.
standing up at the board
no.
or at the chart or, you know, for some reason at your desk and they're doing.
No.
You're in the middle of them walking around. And I wanted to make sure that I pointed that out, because that's something that I've seen adults, they'll forget. They'll it's like, well, you know, if you're over there, I can be over here, and I think I'll just pull the stickies and do whatever I want with them.
Mm-hmm. Right,
and
right.
that was not happening. So we have another routine. This is where a routine becomes obvious, because you started transitioning to a new activity, and the children just quickly and quietly moved to their seats. And I want to remind everybody that we're talking about kindergarten here, okay? And we're not talking about five kids. How many kids do you have in class?
21.
Yeah, 21 kids in that class. And so, you know, if a couple of them get off task, it's pretty quick. You know, it can really disrupt
<Yep. laughs>
the situation. And what I wanted to do is, the children quickly and quietly move to their seats. And if you were asked to explain this to a new teacher, what would you say? You know, if they were brought in to observe you teach and they saw this and you wanted them to specifically make note of that, the way you transitioned, what would you say? You know, think about explaining what it takes to get the children to respond in this manner.
Like we've talked earlier, I mean, this started back in August when we started school. I mean, it goes back from those first 2 weeks, what we've practiced. I mean, they know that that's the way we do things in our class. You know, you don't jump up and run around the room. Of course, you know, that's what they have the tendency to do because they're 5 and 6 year olds. But they know that, you know, that is our procedure of how to move from the floor, from our rug, back to the table. you know, and of course at our tables we have what we call little cubbies, and that's where they keep their pencils, their crayons, and right. our tools. And that particular day they had to go get their not that day, they had to take their paper and put it back in their cubby. And so it goes back to what they know their teacher expects out of them. And so for a new teacher, that would be certainly something to point out, that in the month of May or April or May, for them to be able to do that, it started way back. And we are consistent with that. You know, I don't do it for a week or so and then, you know, back off
right.
of what I expect, because, you know, that consistency is so important for them. And it helps with that transition, which doesn't break. You don't want to break that atmosphere of learning. You know, if you're having to deal with, okay, I told you to come over here, this is where I want you, you know, the behavior part, that's real important to me. I don't want to break that momentum, I guess, that we have.
That's a good way of saying it, because that is, you have that momentum happening, and if you have to spend time going, you know, stop that, mm-hmm. that, sit, move, if you have to do all that, then other kids are going, what were we talking about before?
What do you want us to do?
right. And that's why I came back to that, because I wanted this to reemphasize that this is out of developing the routines and practicing with the kids. And, you know, for a new teacher watching, you know, it might look easy, just like, you know, somebody who, you know, does whatever, whether it's doing 3-point shots in an NBA game or, you know, being able to fix cars, whatever it is, practice makes it easy. Whereas when you're watching them, you go, wow, that I could do that. Well, and they don't know how much goes into it, what you have to do. And that's what, you know, can get people into trouble with working with kids, is they just assume that you should do it because I'm the big guy in the room.
That's right.
So if you were able to have something for your classes, now this is just, you know, money's not an option. If you're able to have something in your classes to assist with their understanding, the students' understanding and learning, and cost is no issue, what would you want to have in your class? What would that be? What would you ask that magic genie?
Well, I would want to have a list of things.
Can I have this whole list?
That's something to really think about. Of course, one of the wonderful things that we have in our classroom, which we feel very fortunate to have, is the smart board. And, of course, being, and I'm not going to say an older teacher, I'm going to say a veteran teacher.
Very nice, very nice.
When we first got the smart boards, you know, I was like, oh, no, what have I got to do now? And I'm one of the ones that just love it, to, you know,
excellent.
As far
awesome.
As part of our instruction and using it as a resource. I know there is something that's called a ladybug. I'm not exactly sure what the title or what you call these little things are, where you can scan.
Oh, yes.
Different materials and put it on the smart board without having to, you know, scan using your computer.
Right. It's a handheld device that you can take and do it right there.
And they're a little costly, but I just think that way I could, you know, share their work, because, you know, young children, they just think whatever they do is the most wonderful thing ever. And the other children can learn from each other. You know, I could use that not only for other type of papers, you know, to use with activities, but to also share their work. That would not be so time consuming as, you know, having to scan with a computer. And because this, from what I understand, you know, it's like you just take a picture of the.
Yes, I've seen them work. They're pretty amazing. And you can, because they work wireless, whether it's through Bluetooth or whatever, mm-hmm. but they work. Where you don't have some long cord following, and you're able to take it through. And there's other devices. Mm-hmm. There's one called Magic Wand or something mm-hmm. like that. And the teacher's just able to scan it, and it sends it in, and push a button here, and poop, there it is up on the screen.
Well, that, and also using books, you know, because that's, you know, one of our real big things is learning to read, and using different literature types of books, children's books, where you could show that up. And so we could all be a part and read together of different books.
Very
that
nice.
We may not, I don't have enough copies for all of them, all the children to have.
Right.
So as a resource, I just think that would be outstanding to have.
Cool. So that would be the thing that you'd like to buy. And if that magic genie could make happen, I like that. Do you have like a favorite resource that you like to use with the kids? Mm-hmm. Is there something that you already have that you really like to use? Tell me what it is and why you like to use it.
Well, I've just mentioned the smart board. It really holds their attention. And of course, you can do different games, you know, reading games, math games. Found out wonderful web out there, you know, just has so many sites that you can go to.
Yes.
You know, we can't ride to Atlanta from Hawkinsville to go to the aquarium. I can pull up, you know, different sites that'll show different sea creatures and sea animals and animals that we can't see here, because we have so many children that are not able to go and we can't afford here at the school,
right,
you know, to take a field trip to Atlanta. But I just feel like we can enhance our teaching, you know, using the internet, you know, and show that on the smart board. I've also have found that there's different sites that you can pull up books, you know, where you can interact with the characters in the stories, and, you know, where the children, you know, really can get excited about reading, you know, to interact with the stories that these wonderful authors have written and the illustrations too. So for someone that really didn't want that thing mounted on my wall.
That's what I like. That's what I was just getting ready to say. You know, for all you listening, this is a veteran teacher, 32 years, you heard her say it, and she was afraid of it at first, but now that's her favorite resource.
I mean, I really, and when you know, the internet's down, you know, in our school, or, you know, we can't access the smart board, it's like, oh my, what are we going to do? You know? But, you know, as far as instruction, the part of the modeling that we talked about earlier, you know, I can do that using the smart board too. So it's really a good resource to take us places where we actually can't get in the car or get on the bus and go.
I like that.
So things that we can learn in science and social studies. And you know, and little children need to be exposed to that to enhance their background knowledge.
Very nice. You know, this is one of my favorite kids' storylines and cartoons is Magic School Bus. And that,
oh, yes.
You sounded like you're starting to go there with that.
Yes.
Let's get messy. Let's learn something, and all the places we can go with all this. So that's great. All right. So now, as we come into, I'm starting to close this out just a little bit. If you were given a chance to speak to a class of 30 brand new elementary teachers, what instructional or classroom advice would you want them to remember the most? So I'm asking you to choose like one thing.
Well, for me, all through these years, the most important thing to remember is it's about the student, and that's what we're here for. Because there's so many other things that teachers are responsible for, especially these days. We have so much paperwork, so many emails, forms to fill out. I mean, it's just a constant something to do. You know, I feel like sometimes we lose sight of what it is we're putting on these forms. You know, what
right.
is all this data about? I just feel like we need to just remember it's these children, it's the students. And that's why you get up and you go to school each day, why you prepare, why you spend so much time on those lesson plans. It's about the students. You know, it's not for just checking that off your list of things to do. And it's gotten to be sort of a difficult job to get everything done that you're supposed to get done, but it's about them. You know, that's why you're a teacher, is you're going to teach them. You're working with the students, and that's why we're here.
I love that. Very, very nice, and I think that's excellent advice. So now let's, in closing, my last question for you is, what I'd like you to do is think back when you were in school, K through 12, and did you have any one teacher that you would thank if you could? And if you did, what would you say?
Well, I've just been very fortunate, of course, to grow up here in Hawkinsville, and I had some wonderful teachers. But the one I think that stands out to me was a fourth grade teacher, and of course, she has passed away now, but she loved to read stories to us. She was a great reading teacher, but she was very creative, and she challenged us to use our imagination. When I was in fourth grade, I was a very quiet, shy little girl, and I just remembered how she impressed upon me that, you know, I could create and I could imagine. She was the first teacher that started working with us on writing. And I think that's one of the reasons I enjoy teaching writing so much to the young children, is because not that I was ever a good writer. It just seemed like there was some power behind that, and you could express yourself maybe in a way that you could not express yourself by talking or getting up in front of people, using writing as a tool to express yourself and to communicate. So I think she made an impression on me with that. I guess gave me an interest in writing and in teaching writing with young children, because, you know, that, of course, that is a big, well, I mean, it's a big thing that we work with students, and we've just recently in the past couple of years started really working with the young students. But that was something that I've always tried to do with them, you know, after they've learned about letters and sounds and conventions, you know, of the English language, to start expressing themselves with writing. And Miss Coley was her name, and I had the opportunity to teach with her daughter for a few years. And after she passed away, her daughter brought me some old yellow papers that Miss Coley had saved of mine. They were poems and some little stories that I had written a child. And of course, that, you know, just really, really touched me in a way that even made her, you know, impression on me so much more powerful, that she actually saved some of my work. And of course, I save the students' work, because it's, you know, you just get so excited about what they can do. So I remember Miss Coley very well.
Thank you for sharing that. That's awesome. And that's so neat. I cannot imagine if one of my former teachers showed me some papers of mine.
I know. Well, thank goodness these were good.
I would be worried that, was I paying attention that day? Okay. That's, what an amazing story. Thank you so much, Jean. And thank you for spending time with us today. I greatly appreciate the time you've taken out of your day and putting up with me visiting your class. And the kids went about doing their thing. And I actually was able to become a fly on the wall, I think. And
well, I sort of had to prep them a little bit, because they love for people to come in our room, and we're very social. I had to prep them a little bit. Of course, they did notice you as a visitor, but they stayed on task very well, I thought.
Yes, they did. Yes, they did. You have a great bunch of kids. So greatly appreciate the time you spent with us, and congratulations on your 32 years of teaching.
Well, thank you.
And thank you for sharing with all of us, and have a great afternoon.
Okay, thank you.
I hope that as you listen to our discussion here, that some of what you'll do is you'll think about what you could take from what Jean talked about in her class and put towards changing the way you do instruction, or the routines and practices that maybe you need to create in your classrooms. So something to think about. Have an awesome afternoon.
Hello, listeners. We want to remind everyone to check out all of our digital content at teachinglearningleadingk12.com. That's teachinglearningleadingk12.com. You can also find our podcast on iTunes. Just search Teaching Learning Leading K-12 in the iTunes store. Check back often for updates and new material.
You have been listening to Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12, recorded in Eastman, Georgia, at the Heart of Georgia Precinct.